When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
In the last birth story episode of the podcast, which was episode 295, we heard a beautiful out-of-hospital birth that went very smoothly. But the reality is that birth doesn't always go according to plan. And in today's episode, Megan shares her powerful and emotional story of a rare birth emergency, an umbilical cord prolapse at a birth center that led to a hospital transfer and a crash C-section. Her story is a raw look at what can happen when emergencies arise and why informed decision-making is so important. Wherever you're planning to give birth, there is so much to learn here about asking the right questions, advocating for yourself, and preparing for the unexpected. Welcome to the Birth with Power podcast, where knowledge is power and power transforms birth. I'm Dr. Nicole Calloway Rankins, mom of two and practicing board-certified OBGYN with over 20 years of experience and nearly 2,000 births attended. I've seen firsthand how the hospital system can leave women feeling unheard and uncertain, but that doesn't have to be your story. Here, you'll get the knowledge, support, and strategies to take charge of your birth experience so you can walk into the hospital feeling calm, confident, and empowered. Note, this podcast is for educational purposes only, and it's not a substitute for medical advice. See the full disclaimer at drnicolerankins.com/disclaimer. Now let's get to it. Pregnancy can be overwhelming, but your inbox doesn't have to be. The Birth with Power Brief is my free weekly newsletter with expert tips, real talk, and support you can actually use. No pressure, no preachy advice, just a breath of fresh air in your inbox every Thursday. Come join me at drnicolerankins.com/email. Hello there. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. This is episode number 298. Whether this is your first time listening or you've been here before, I'm so glad you're spending some time with me today. Now, back in episode 295, I shared a story of an out-of-hospital birth that went beautifully. You can listen to that episode at drnicolerankins.com/episode295. But today, we're exploring the other side of that experience, because while out-of-hospital births can be wonderful, they can also come with some real risk. My guest in this episode, Megan, is a stay-at-home mama of two little boys. She loves coffee, thrifting, and exploring the Pacific Northwest. She joins me to share her second birth story, which started at a standalone birth center and turned into a life-threatening emergency involving an umbilical cord prolapse and an urgent hospital transfer. This is an emotional and important conversation about the realities of rare birth complications, the gaps that can exist between birth centers and hospitals, and why it's so important to ask questions no matter where you're giving birth. And even if you're planning a hospital birth, like most folks are, there are some key lessons here in this story around communication, continuity of care, and preparing for the unexpected. Megan's story is one of strength, resilience, and ultimately healing, and I am so honored to share it with you. So let's go ahead and get into this birth story with Megan. Thank you so much, Megan, for agreeing to come onto the podcast. I'm really excited to have you share your story.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, so why don't you start off by telling us a bit about yourself and your family?
So I am a stay-at-home mom, and I have two little boys, Arrow, who's 4, and Rhodes is 2.
Oh, I love those names.
Yeah, thank you. I'm pregnant with our third, our little rainbow baby girl, and I've been married to my husband for almost 7 years now.
Okay.
We live in the greater Seattle area, so we spend a lot of time thrifting, drinking coffee, exploring nature.
Nice. Nice. Love it. Yeah. Love it. Love it. So we're on opposite coast. I'm in Richmond, Virginia. Yes. So we're truly opposite coast. Yes. So I'm going to ask you about your third pregnancy and how you've decided to handle that based on this pregnancy, but today, or the pregnancy that we're talking about rather today, which is your second birth. Mm-hmm. And this, for your second birth, you decided to go with a standalone birth center for your birth. What made you decide to do that? And I guess I'm assuming you went with the hospital birth the first time.
Yes. Okay. So just to give like a short context, mm-hmm. my first birth was 41 week, no signs of labor, induction. Mm-hmm. And I was 1 centimeter for 14 hours of unmedicated labor on Pitocin.
Okay.
Which is significant because I also am 1 centimeter in my other birth story. So I had lots of IV issues and I ended up choosing the epidural, which was a great tool in that birth.
Okay.
And yeah, 24 hour induction. I pushed in 50 minutes and it was a great vaginal birth, but just a lot of interventions I wasn't wanting to have.
Okay.
So that kind of led me to making my choice about the standalone birth center. Mm-hmm. I felt that because I was low risk and it was just down the street from a hospital, I felt safe and I felt like it was a cozier environment and I had done so much preparation that I could do it unmedicated this time.
Okay.
So that was kind of why I made that choice.
Okay. So it wasn't that your first birth necessarily was bad or anything. You just wanted something different.
Yes, okay. Exactly.
Got it. Got it. So then what was your pregnancy and prenatal care like for your second birth and how did that compare to your first?
Yeah, both of my boys' pregnancies were really easy. Mm-hmm. I had no nausea, no, I only had like back pain and heartburn towards the end, mm-hmm. but no complications. Everything was always good at every appointment. I felt very safe there. I remember I would ask like so many questions mm-hmm. about safety concerns, right. Just very paranoid about choosing out of hospital.
Okay.
And I always felt like they answered great. Yeah, it just felt like a no-brainer to go with there. Okay. And yeah, just an easy pregnancy.
Interesting. Were the appointments longer? Do you feel like you got more attention compared to your first pregnancy?
Yes, mm-hmm. I would say, yeah, they were longer and I was able to bring my son. It was still kind of during COVID. It was, you know, earlier 2022. So it was, if I would have been at the hospital, I would have had to find childcare, which I didn't have.
Gotcha.
So that was another big factor was he was always welcome mm-hmm. and got to be a part of that journey with me.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I was happy with the care.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. What did you do to prepare for your birth?
I did, with both pregnancies, I did a 12-week Bradley method course.
Okay.
So they let me just do it again since I was friends with the person leading it. So
gotcha.
I did that, which was really helpful. And I always go to the chiropractor. Mm-hmm. I always hire a doula.
Okay.
It was a different doula this time that also worked at the birth center.
Okay.
So I went with her and then I also just watched lots of natural birth videos mm-hmm. and just learned different breathing techniques
sure.
and walked a lot.
Okay. Okay. Was there anything that you didn't like about the first doula experience or you just went with what was at the birth center?
She was newer mm-hmm. and I felt like once I got the epidural, mm-hmm. there was nothing that she was able to really do for me.
Gotcha.
And so I just felt like, well, let's try something new this time. And this one also offered photography, which was really big for me. Right. So I was like, okay, perfect.
Yeah, yeah that is nice. Okay. And then what were some things that you wanted for your birth this time?
I always said no interventions.
Okay.
I wanted low intervention. I wanted dim lighting, limited cervix checks. Those were already hard for me due to some past trauma. And mm-hmm. so it was just like, less checks, worship music, cozy lights. That was pretty much it. I just wanted to labor and yeah.
Okay. All right.
Be at peace. Yeah.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And then were any of those options for your first birth at all? I'm just really curious about the comparison between the two.
Yes. I remember the nurses said that this is the coziest room we've ever been in. I always have like my twinkle lights, right. my diffuser,
right.
worship music on okay. and it was really peaceful, but yeah, I mean, there was interventions right away with mm-hmm. my first birth and like immediately they talked me through a cesarean because like they didn't know if he was handling the Pitocin well.
Gotcha.
So I already had a lot of like fear,
mm-hmm.
put in me about a C-section. Okay. I have past trauma from an appendix surgery that went wrong.
Okay.
And it was like a 3-month recovery, second surgery. God. So like, okay. I did not want to hear the word C-section.
Got it.
And they brought it on within the first couple of hours of my first. So I was already like
kind of on edge.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Was there anything in particular that you were worried about giving birth at the birth center?
Yes. I remember I had this, I don't know, maybe it was my intuition, but I was just chalking it up to intrusive thoughts and fear. But I was really worried about a rare birth emergency and how they would handle it.
Okay. Lord have mercy. Yeah. Okay. See, I know what's coming. So that's why I'm like,
it was like, okay, kind of like a not impending doom, but like at the end, I had this strong feeling like I'm a very rare things happen to me. Right. I just had this gut feeling, but I thought it was just fear. And I was like, I'm going to lay that fear down. I can't make choices off of that.
Okay.
But I asked at several appointments, how long are transfer times? They always said 10 minutes until your baby's out. Because it really is down the road.
Okay.
And I was worried about shoulder dystocia, but they said they've never had one and I don't need to worry about rare emergencies because I'm low risk.
Sure.
So I just kind of talked myself out of it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Did the birth center have a good relationship with the hospital?
So I assumed, but no.
Oh.
This is something that kind of comes out later.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess we'll get into that then.
Yes.
Okay. 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 Why is it so hard to find cute clothes when you're pregnant? Nothing fits quite right, your style's evolving, and spending a ton on clothes you'll only wear for a few months? Yeah, that's a big fat no. That's why I love Armoire. It's a clothing rental service that makes it so much easier to look and feel great through pregnancy, postpartum, and honestly, every phase of womanhood. You take a quick style quiz, build your closet, and get beautiful, high-quality pieces delivered to your door. No laundry, no clutter, just style that keeps up with you. And it's not just for pregnancy. I got the dress I'm wearing to my daughter's high school graduation from Armoire. It's flowy, comfortable, beautiful, and yes, it even has pockets. Plus, Armoire is woman-owned and features women-owned designers, so your closet can reflect your vibe and your values. Right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/Dr. Nicole. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/Dr. Nicole to get up to 50% off your first month. And never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. So let's talk about what happened. Like, did you go into labor? What exactly happened with your birth?
Yes. So I was 39 weeks and 2 days when I went into labor at home. Mm-hmm. And this was exciting because I never went into labor last time.
Sure.
So it was really strange, the type of contractions I had. I was meal prepping for freezer meals. My grandma just came to town. And they were like hot flashes. So it would like start at my feet and rise up to my head. And that was like the top of the contraction.
Okay.
And I almost wanted to like drop to my knees. They were so intense.
Mm.
And none of my other labor contractions were like this, except for the first 10 leading up to my water breaking.
Right.
So I had those. And then my water broke, huge gush.
Okay.
All over the playroom as I was like frantically packing bags. So yeah, that was crazy. Everyone saw it. That was in my house.
Right.
And I was like, Okay. I'm in labor.
There you go.
So we ended up going straight to the birth center just because those contractions were so weird. And I was like, I just want to be checked on.
Right.
And so I showed up there about 6:30 at night. My doula was there. And of course, I was 1 centimeter, which is the same thing as last time. And I was like, great, I'm not going to progress. But I had this weird feeling. Typically, they wouldn't have kept me. I would have gone back home,
right.
But I have this feeling that I need to stay there.
Okay.
And I think they kind of picked up on that and they let me stay the night.
Okay.
And so I had contractions. They just weren't consistent and I was handling them really well. But by morning, so 7:40 the next morning, my husband actually had run to the store because I already went through all of the diapers for postpartum because I had so much fluid.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, okay. I was never diagnosed with anything.
Right.
Like no polyhedramnosis or whatever it's called.
Right.
But I just had a lot of fluid. And so I was like, that's kind of weird. But they decided to give me castor oil and I did not know any of the risks. I just was like, sure, I'm still 1 centimeter, 14 hours into labor, which is like identical to my first birth. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, sure, we'll do the castor oil. And so my doula made me breakfast. I did the castor oil because she also worked at the birth center. So she was able to use their kitchen and stuff.
Gotcha.
So my contractions went from 0 to 1,000.
Okay.
And I was using the combs to cope, holding my husband's hand. Uh-huh. And I was breathing through them well. It was just clearly they were different.
Gotcha.
And so within 2 hours of the castor oil, I thought I was pushing.
Oh.
And so I was like, okay, I was just trying to be intuitive. I'm like, I'm pretty sure I'm pushing. Like, maybe you guys should check.
Right.
Something's coming out of me. I'm pretty sure it's his head.
Right.
And so they were like, okay, like that would be crazy, but we'll check. And so really quickly, things changed.
Okay.
They got a second opinion because they weren't sure what they were seeing.
Uh-huh.
They had a midwife come in. And then I just remember they yelled, cord, prep the hospital, flip onto all fours. And I was just, I remember knowing what a cord prolapse is because my first birth, they talked me through it when they broke my water.
Right.
So I knew what it was, but my husband didn't. So he was Googling it and he was very scared. So I remember, you know, I had to flip onto all fours on a mattress, which is not very easy.
Right.
And they were like, this is going to be extremely painful, but I didn't know what was really going on. And so they pushed him out of like, he was pretty low, I guess.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. They just had to get his head off the cord.
Sure.
So they, I remember three distinctive, like painful shoves and then using language I never use, screaming. I felt like I was being tortured. And then, yeah, my husband said he'll never forget the sounds I made. Like it was crazy. And so I remember a lot of people were in the room to kind of assist her.
Right.
And I loved the midwife I had for my emergency. She's not the owner. So that's something that I really loved working with her. So someone whispered in my ear, you need to stay calm for your baby.
Right.
And that changed everything because I was like, if there's one thing I can control, it's my breathing, his oxygen.
Yep.
You know, that's all I can control.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was the calmest I've ever been in my entire life.
Okay.
And they called 911. The EMTs were pretty slow moving, but I think it's just because we had to be moved together onto off the bed onto the gurney and then rolled out. They were still deciding which hospital to take me to, which was crazy because one was 20 minutes away and one was 1 mile away.
Right.
So they ended up doing the one further away would have been a better hospital, but we didn't have time for that. So we went down the road.
Okay. I mean, was it like lights and sirens?
Yes. I remember that because sirens are still very triggering for me today. So I remember lights and sirens. Mm-hmm. I remember my best friend had arrived to the birth center to help me labor right when I was being wheeled out.
Right.
So she saw everything and she was able to take our car so my husband could go with me.
Okay.
They weren't going to let him, but he was like, I need to be with her.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I found out later I was 5 centimeters. So, and she was just holding his head in there.
And did the midwife go with you or did they?
Yes.
Okay.
The midwife did not leave me from the moment she put her head on the baby until my C-section was done.
Okay.
So we were just moving together, which is really complicated.
Yes,
position-wise.
Yes.
But I ended up having to go between like knees to chest to downward dog, depending on if she couldn't feel his head off. So I was like in yoga mode for a full hour.
Gotcha. And so that whole time she had her hand in your vagina trying to keep the baby's head off of the cord.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you end up going to the closest hospital.
Yes. Went to the closest hospital and they had to drive really slow so that we wouldn't be disheveled. They couldn't find his heart rate because they didn't have a baby Doppler. They had some other device in the ambulance. So in my head, I'm like, okay, this could go either way, like either stillborn or brain damage. But I was just trusting that God was protecting him. I saw a cross like engraved on the metal on the ground from just being like scratched up.
Because
my head was down the entire time off the gurney. And they kept checking on me. And I'm like, I'm fine, I'm fine.
Right.
And I was just in my zone. And so we finally got there. And I could just see everyone's shoes. They were trying to get me in to the OR, but they couldn't lock the gurney and they wouldn't let the firemen in. So it took them like 5 to 10 minutes to even just get us over to the other bed.
Okay.
They didn't know where their equipment was. It was a very rural, small hospital.
Oh.
And I found out later that their labor and delivery was like shut down for renovations. And now it's like closed permanently today. So it was like kind of in a place of like, oh. I think they were deciding to shut it down or not. So things weren't like attended to as much.
Right.
And so I found out later that there's no OB there. There's no anesthesia. No one is on site, which I was not told that. So they all had to be called in. And so that's why it took a half an hour from when I got in the OR to like start the surgery. So the catheter took like 20 minutes because they couldn't figure it out. And I'm unmedicated, so I can feel everything.
Oh,
and
God.
I just remember like when they flipped us over,
uh-huh.
It was pretty easy. I was just in some type of mindset where I just figured it out. And so they put her on one side of the drape holding his head. And then I'm obviously laying there and the baby flipped to like breech or transverse. But they didn't know that because he was head down.
Sure.
And then right before they put me to sleep, I looked up and I knew the person. She was wearing a mask, but I knew her from, she leads worship at my church. And
right.
So I was like, I know you. I'm like, pray for him. His name is Rhodes. And so it was really comforting to have her right at my head.
Sure, sure.
She wasn't supposed to be there that day. So that was a total miracle.
Okay, I'm sorry. During this time, had they heard the baby's heartbeat?
So they did not, but my midwife could feel him moving. And then right as I was about to like get put to sleep, I heard heart rate 150. And I was like, what? Like, he's alive?
Okay.
And
that was the first time that they had checked the heart rate? Or just...
They just couldn't find it. Like, the Doppler in the ambulance was not the right kind with our position.
And then in the hospital, they couldn't find it either.
It was so hectic. Sure. I don't even know if they were checking. I think they just wanted to get him out.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Lord have mercy.
So I really thought, like, he's
right.
not going to make it.
Right. Okay. So then they put you to sleep. Finally, so it took 30 minutes for the OB and the anesthesiologist to get
just
there.
Just going down the road, it was a 50-minute ordeal until they got the baby out.
Oh, my God. And then the OB. So, I mean, I guess the OB just walks in and is like, hey, I'm going to do your C-section. And that was it.
Yes. She basically said, the first thing she said was, oh, my gosh, this one makes me really nervous. I don't have a good feeling about this. And I was like, okay, I feel really good. Let's do this.
Okay.
And so that was my first impression. And I can only see her shoes. So I don't know what anyone looks like. I never saw the OR. Nothing. I just was head down the entire time.
Sure.
So, yeah, heard heart rate 150, and then I was out.
Okay.
And I found out later it took me about 3 hours to wake up, just longer than normal.
It's a lot longer than normal, actually, after general anesthesia. Okay.
Yeah,
did they know why or just?
No, they didn't even have any like electric note taking during it. So everything was really confusing in the notes. There was 3 different times of birth. Don't know what time he was born. Everything was just, it kind of felt like playing telephone. Like,
sure.
This person verbally said this, and then I'm sure they took a note, but it was so hectic.
Right.
They didn't have my name or anything. So they gave me blood during the surgery, which I'm not sure if I hemorrhaged or not. No one could clarify that. But I found out that when they went to pull him out, his hand came out.
Okay.
And so they weren't expecting that. They only had a couple minutes before the anesthetic got to him.
Right.
And the vacuum didn't work. She had to get like 3 people to help her try to like pull him out, and she couldn't get him out. And so finally, like right before it could have gotten bad, they got him out.
Okay.
And they did 12 minutes of resuscitation mask on him, like oxygen.
Uh-huh.
They didn't have to do chest compressions.
Okay, so he was breathing then.
He was breathing, really low Apgar scores, which is expected.
Okay. What were his Apgar scores?
I think it was a 3.
Okay.
Yeah, if I remember right, it was like a 3.
Okay.
And then it slowly went up after like an hour maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And the only issues he was having was low blood sugar from the traumatic birth. So My husband couldn't be in there because I went under.
Sure.
So my best friend and him were told to stand outside of this wall in this hallway. And if they could hear the baby cry, then he survived.
Right.
And then they would let him know when he could come and hold the baby.
Right.
So it was like a storage closet where they put the babies after.
Okay.
It was very weird. My husband felt very uncomfortable, but it was like this tiny room and he was just holding Rhodes in there. And they did his weight and everything. I just know because of videos I have.
Sure.
And then I woke up a few hours later and I just remember I was really groggy, obviously, mm-hmm. but I remember saying, is he alive?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, yes, he's with dad. But I still was skeptical. I thought maybe they weren't going to tell me the news when I'm by myself.
Okay.
And so I asked her probably 10 more times.
Right.
I just kept saying it. And I was like, please get me to my baby.
Right.
And they wheeled me up there and he wasn't in the room. It was just my best friend and my doula. And I was like, I don't think he made it.
Right.
And so a couple of minutes later, my husband was walking in with the baby in his arms. And I was like, he survived. I was so happy. It was like the best moment of my life. I don't have any memory of it. Just pictures that my doula took.
Sure.
I don't have memory of the first 24 hours, but he nursed really well the first time. So I felt really hopeful about that. And I looked really sad in all the pictures, which it just brings me back to, I was very confused.
Yeah. A lot happened and just,
Yeah. It's very evident in the pictures. I did not look happy and I still feel bad about that. But
I mean, it kind of is what it like. That was a lot to experience.
Yes.
In such a short period of time. So.
Yes.
So you wake up from the surgery, you do see that he's alive, but then what happened with him? Because then did he have to get trained? Like, how was his course afterwards? And then I guess how was your course afterwards?
So we had 24 hours together and they just kept seeing that his blood sugars were low. And the only thing they could do, they couldn't even do like a sugar IV. I think that's what they usually do. They couldn't do anything there except for force formula down him.
Okay.
And they would say, try to breastfeed. That's best for him, like right now. And I had a great nursing journey with my first 14 months. I knew what I was doing.
Right.
I wanted to breastfeed, but they would give me maybe a minute to get him to latch.
Right.
Before they were like, you need to hurry. He's not doing well. Like, his numbers are way below normal. And they were like, I think you just need to give him formula right now. And they just had like cold formula and not a good brand. And they would just make me give it to him. And, you know, it would work for a little bit. His blood sugar would go up.
Right.
And it would go back down. And they basically, the pediatrician came in and he was like, your baby's throwing up everything he eats. I've never seen this before. And his numbers aren't improving and we have nothing to do for him here. And so I was like, okay, then let's talk about transferring him. Like, why is he still here?
Right.
And I remember I just was like so panicked. I was convinced me or him was going to die. They barely checked on me. I was left with one pad and I didn't walk for over 24 hours. They just kept forgetting I was there. They would say like, you should be over this by now. It's been 4 hours. You should not have anxiety about this anymore. You both made it. And I was like, okay, like, I guess I'm being dramatic. And they didn't hook up my leg cuffs to prevent blood clots, but they didn't believe me. They were like, you had a spinal, you can't feel it. I'm like, I didn't have a spinal.
Right.
And they were like, oh, you're right, there's no tubes. Let me go look in the basement to find tubes. I'm like, okay, we're gonna hopefully survive this.
Okay.
And I was in like such a dark place that I was calling the birth center, begging them to transfer me, or like I was asking, can I call 911? Can I take out my stuff and get us out of here AMA? Like, how do I get out of here? And I really thought that was like a logical idea, even though I couldn't walk or anything.
Sure.
But I was so just traumatized from everyone. And so when they started bringing up the transfer, I was really relieved. I didn't want him there anymore. I wanted him in good hands. Mm-hmm. And so the nurse was saying, okay, we're at 22 hours. I can either help you walk or I can get your baby's transfer papers done. And I said, do the baby first. And she said, okay, I won't come back in until he's done. And she was already kind of not being nice to me, but they only had one nurse.
Right.
And so it just was how it was. And so she came back 10 minutes later and I'm like, okay, so he's good to go. And she was like yelling at me, calling me disrespectful, saying I was rushing her. And she's like, so do you want me to choose you or your baby? And I was like, I'm sorry, I just thought you came back in because you said you wouldn't come back in until you were done. She was like, well, no, I didn't finish it yet. We're really busy. And she's like, was yelling at me. My husband had to like stick up for me. And I just said, do the baby first. I'll walk eventually. So she went back out. She said, I won't be coming back in here. Like, you'll have a new nurse when there's a shift change, but I'm not coming back. And I was like, okay. And so she did not come back. And for several hours, no one came back. And then they had Seattle Children's come and he got put in a little incubator. Mm-hmm. They got a feeding tube in. They couldn't get his IVs in just because he was so small. I guess I don't know why.
Okay. Oh, how much did he weigh?
He wasn't small. He was 8 pounds, 9.5 ounces.
Okay.
And 21.5 inches long.
Right.
So he wasn't small, but they just couldn't get
his
IVs in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they took him to the NICU and I sent my husband to go with, which if I knew how good the NICU was, I probably would have had my husband stay with me.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know how he would be treated there.
Sure.
And so I was like, go with him. Don't leave him ever.
Okay.
And so he left me and I was alone for a little bit until my mom and grandma arrived. Or sorry, my grandma arrived and my best friend Lexi arrived. And they were going to stay with me. My friend Lexi stayed so my grandma didn't have to sleep on like a chair.
Okay.
So they stayed with me the next 24 hours. And the nurses that came on were really sweet. And they helped me walk and I would just do laps and laps to try to get out of there quicker. And I remember showering alone. They didn't help me and I just showered by myself and I was really sad. And
this is, wow.
Yeah.
Was there an option for you to get transferred with him?
No, they said that that would be going against medical advice since I hadn't walked yet. And they were just like, they won't take you. So I almost called 911, which is crazy.
Yeah,
I was
get me out of here.
But everyone was just like, no one will listen to you. Like, you have to stay here. We need to get you walking and then you'll be able to go. We'll take good care of you. And they really did. They were a lot better nurses.
Okay.
Later
things got better in terms of the care at the hospital. Okay.
Yeah. I just slept with his picture. They took a picture of him. So I slept with that and his hat. And I ended up stopping pumping altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Went 24 hours without pumping because it was making me so mad that nothing was coming out.
Sure.
And I was like, you know what? I won't be able to breastfeed. It is what it is. And so I finally got discharged. And
how many days after the C-section?
48 hours, like exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So I got discharged and I had no clothes or anything. So my grandma went into Target to get me a sweater and then we went straight to the NICU.
Uh-huh. And how far away was that?
20 minutes.
Okay.
It was at the hospital I had my first son at, so I was very familiar with it.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay.
And they were amazing. They welcomed me with open arms. They were so excited that Rhodes' mom was there, and they were just the best team I could have asked for.
Mm-hmm.
They did not even show up a second late for his feedings. They were on top of it. His blood sugar took like 2.5 days to regulate, and he got off the feeding tube, and I was able to breastfeed him there because they were very patient with me. They really valued breastfeeding there, so they were just like, take your time.
Mm-hmm.
I got to like enjoy some meals with my husband because my friends back home like arranged all the childcare for me because we were gone for like 4 or 5 days at that point.
Right.
Total.
Right.
And so they told me that I should go home to sleep because there was only a chair. And after a C-section, that was not comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So I did go home because I felt so safe.
Right.
With them there. And so I would just call in the middle of the night the NICU and they would answer my calls and tell me how he was doing. And they were so good. But I was up 5 a.m. bright and early, ready to go see him again. My husband was like, you're crazy. You need to sleep. So we got all loaded up and my best friend stayed with my son so that we could go back to the NICU. And we would just spend all day there. And they finally decided that he was ready to be discharged.
Okay. So NICU nurses are angels.
When
my daughter was in the NICU, they're just angels. They're special, special people.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you had that good experience. Hot sleepers, listen up. This one is for you. You probably know Avocado Green Mattress for their organic mattresses. They're amazing. But did you know that they also make breathable, natural bedding that'll completely upgrade how you sleep this summer? I am talking buttery soft, organic cotton sheets, light as air, silk duvets, and down that's so breathable it feels like you are sleeping under a cloud. And listen, this isn't just about getting cozy. It's about knowing exactly what you're bringing into your home. Avocado uses certified organic and ethically sourced materials, so you're not sleeping in chemicals or mystery fabrics. Just clean, sustainable comfort that actually supports your health and the planet. So if you're swapping sweaters for sandals, it might be time to refresh your bedding too. Sleep cooler, feel better, and rest easier because you deserve that. Head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. Let me back up and say, question you or say anything about you giving birth at the birth center? At the first hospital, at either hospital, I guess.
Yes, at the one that I had my C-section, they immediately were questioning the midwives. They did not understand why I came in the needed chest position, even though that's what you're supposed to do. But they were very upset that I wasn't just on my back. And they were questioning that she lied about the position of the baby because he flipped. But she knew he was head down. Right. She could feel his head.
Right.
But they questioned like her intelligence as a midwife. And I could just tell that there wasn't a good relationship. And later I found out that they do not view the birth center well, and they get a lot more transfers than I was told. So I was told one transfer a year from the birth center, but that there was like three in the week that I had my baby. And they had a lot of transfers. So maybe they weren't all emergencies, but they did have transfers.
Gotcha. Okay.
So that was interesting information to find out.
Okay. So transfers to that, did they always transfer to that specific hospital, or did they ever transfer to the other hospital?
The emergency ones, yes. Okay.
The emergency ones, yes.
And then I found out with my latest pregnancy that the hospital that had the NICU and that I'm using this time, they also don't have a good relationship with that birth center.
Okay.
And they all know the names, everything. So yeah, I felt very validated, but I was just really disappointed that I'll kind of go into when I share my advice, like what I would do differently if I was choosing out of the hospital.
Right. Okay. So then how long did your son stay in the NICU, you said?
2.5 days.
2.5 days. Okay. I'm sure that was a long 2.5 days, but in the
And they were like, this is the biggest baby we've ever had in the NICU.
NICU babies are usually tiny. Yeah. Yes. And then what were things like when you went home?
Honestly, awful. I usually love the newborn phase. It's like my favorite, but we came home and no one told me to protect my mental health, but my toddler was like extremely ill. And so I wanted to keep them separate. My husband and I both had a mental breakdown, which he never does. So for him to have one, I was like, okay, we are in a really bad situation. So we decided to divide and conquer. And so he slept in our guest room with my toddler. And it was really sad because my toddler, they're exactly 2 years apart. And he knew from like 16 months on, like about baby, he was so excited. And then we had him in a mask to meet him, and it just felt like so sad and not how I wanted it.
Right.
And then I was recovering in my room. My grandma stayed for a week. And then after that, my son was still sick. So the second week I was like alone taking care of my son and recovering from a C-section. And my husband's leave was only 2 weeks, and the whole 2 weeks we were apart. And so he got to work from home for a bit, which was really nice.
Okay.
But yeah, so we came home and we were just like, this is crazy.
Right.
How did we get in this situation? Our son's never been this sick. Why now?
Right.
And it was a really dark time. I couldn't find anyone online that had a cord prolapse out of hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally found some moms that had them, and I was able to connect with them, but it was very lonely. Like, no one knew what I went through.
Sure, sure. And, you know, people say that have an emergency C-section, and I'm not dismissing what people say, or they have an emergency, mm-hmm. but cord prolapse is the emergency.
Yeah.
Like, it is a true obstetric mm-hmm. emergency. So it's really hard to relay that to people, because yeah. there's not a whole lot of discussion. It's like, we have to get this baby born as quickly as possible before his blood supply gets cut off. And it's yeah. like running down the halls, its cords ripped out the walls. Yeah. This is the emergency. And yeah. it's not that common. So I can't remember the last time I've seen a cord prolapse, knock on wood.
But, yeah.
So yeah, I can totally see why it was hard for you to find
yes.
people who experienced it.
Yeah.
And then just, did you go back and see the birth center afterwards, or the OB afterwards who did your C-section? Like, what was that care or follow-up like?
So what's interesting, and something I didn't know beforehand, was that once you have a C-section, they drop you like as a patient at the birth center. Like, there's no follow-up.
I'm sorry. They don't even check what, like, they didn't like, they just,
I was the one being like, I need someone to come here. I need an appointment.
Right.
Someone needs to come here, because the OB was just my surgeon.
Right.
I had never seen that person.
Right.
And I only had one follow-up staple removal appointment, and that was it.
Right.
And so they were like, I mean, you can schedule your 6 week, but you should see your provider. And I'm like, my provider doesn't want to see me.
Right.
And so I was just like advocating for myself. They did come out to my house, and then I did get the midwife that I love that was with me during the emergency. She was like an angel on earth. Best person. She did make an appointment with me and for like my 6 week, and we did so much processing together.
Okay.
And she is the only person that did not abandon me.
Okay.
After the birth, the owner never checked on me until I left a review at 9 months postpartum. That was like a respectful review, but it was honest. Just mm-hmm. ask about transfer times, ask about all those things. It was just bringing people to make informed consent, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And she did not like that. And I remember I called to get my medical records because they blocked me from them after I left the review. And I called and I was talking to the front desk, and they said they're going to put me on hold and they'll answer. They put her on the phone. So it was like they made a note in my file, like, if Megan calls,
right,
only let the owner talk to her,
right,
type of thing. It was very weird. I'm like,
right,
yeah, I was just calling about my medical records. And she was like, I saw you left a review. Like, the first thing she said to me was about my review, and I had several phone calls after that where they were, like, not happy with me for leaving a review, even though I looked in their policy and it said that you can leave a review without any harassment.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, anybody should be able to leave a review about any services
yeah.
they get. Yeah, that you can't keep people from doing that. Okay.
Yes. So I really was hurt by that person,
sure.
but I, you know, all the other midwives said that they were too busy to have coffee with me in process. Even though I wasn't saying, like, right now, I just wanted eventually,
right.
like, can we get coffee? And the only people that met with me was my friend that worked at the hospital in the OR. And then the midwife I had in the emergency has been amazing.
Okay.
So I was abandoned. There was no postpartum resources given to me. No, like, this is a great counselor. This is a great
mm-hmm.
anything. It was just like, you're on your own.
Mm-hmm.
You're not a birth center mom. You're not. I didn't feel like a C-section mom. I didn't feel like
yeah,
an unmedicated like birth mom. I was just in the middle.
Limbo.
Like,
yeah. Yeah.
I didn't relate to anyone like yeah. that loved C-sections. I just was in the middle, and mm-hmm. I'm like, mm-hmm. it saved my baby, but it was really hard. So,
okay. Okay.
Really dark time.
Wow.
Yeah.
So then did you eventually find a therapist or?
Yes. So I had a therapist from before pregnant. So during my pregnancy.
Uh huh.
So I continued with that therapist
okay.
and I started EMDR.
Okay.
Which was a huge part of the healing process. I did that for probably a year and a half. And then I did pelvic floor therapy, found people online to connect with, which was really healing.
Mm-hmm.
Trauma groups, the VBAC Link podcast mm-hmm. was like, finally a year after, I was like, okay, I think I could do a VBAC. I was terrified of any risk before that. And I already started interviewing OBs and midwives to do family planning appointments. To know, like, what age gap should I do if I want a VBAC? How could I have a birth next time that's trauma-informed? So I was doing that, like, 8 weeks postpartum, I interviewed people. Like, I was very set on, like, what went wrong in this?
Right.
How do we change it for next time? And it was really healing. And just processing with friends was huge. I had some really close friends that they didn't care how many times I told them.
Right.
And they would just let me share. And I think, like, a lot of people are scared to do that. But that's, like, my biggest thing that helped me, I think, was just having trusted people that had unmedicated natural births, mm-hmm. and they understood, like, my heartbreak of how my birth turned out.
And would you say for you, was it, like, it's not necessarily that you need people to say anything or do anything in particular, or was it just that you needed someone, like, I just need to get this out, I just need to share it?
I just needed to, like, be able to share mm-hmm. without someone feeling like I was questioning their birthing choices. Mm. 'Cause I don't care where other people give birth. Mm-hmm. It's just, I was now mad at this option. I was angry. I was just sharing. And they also had births with that birth center, and they were so loving, and they just let me share. And, like, I'm sure they would feel the same exact way if it happened to them.
Sure.
So it was just, like, very healthy to have friends on both sides, C-section mom friends and home birth mom friends that were like, we hear you. We get you. Like,
Right.
It was really healing.
Well, that's good. That's good. So then when you got pregnant with this baby, with your little girl, mm-hmm. Did you decide that you were going to go back to the place you went the first time?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I was like, no questions asked. I'm going back there. I hired a new doula, which I'm really excited about. She is very fiery like me and will advocate with me. And I'm just really excited to work with her. But yeah, I just knew, like, I loved the midwives there. There was great OBs there if anything arises. And they said that they'd put me near the OR. I'd be monitored the whole time like I wanted. Yeah, they just answered all my questions. And I know, like, there's a chance there'll be more interventions than I would want. But I really feel like they're fighting for me to have a VBAC.
Okay.
Also.
Okay.
And so.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. That's really, really important.
Yeah.
So you're seeing midwives in the hospital setting with physician backup?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Got it. Okay. All right. So, God, that was a lot. I just, I like have a whole page of notes. I don't even know.
I'm like, I'm sure no one's heard a birth story like this. So,
yes. This is, but it's really important for people to understand that these things can happen.
Yes.
Like we need to hear the full gamut of the possibilities for birth. So I'm really grateful that you came and shared your story. So then what would you say is your one favorite piece of advice or thing that you would tell someone who's getting ready for their birth?
Yeah, I would say if you're choosing out of hospital or home birth, that ask the surrounding hospitals how their relationship is with that provider. Sometimes they won't feel comfortable sharing, but if you have any connections to the hospital, ask mm-hmm. those people in your life and ask about how often they see transfers. Because I think a lot of times midwives want to share their best, right? Like, they mm-hmm. don't want to scare you. They don't want to bring up how many transfers there are or what can happen. But I think that in order to make an informed choice about where you're giving birth, you should know that transfers can take up to an hour, not just 10 minutes. And I think you should know if the hospital even has a labor and delivery. And if they have anesthesia there, that's something I would look for next time, would be make sure that they have anesthesia, OBs there, and that they have a great relationship so the transfer is smooth.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Other than that, I think birth wherever you want, but I think, you should be informed and be told the truth.
1,000%.
Yeah.
1,000%. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for agreeing to come into the podcast. Where can women connect with you? Maybe somebody else hears this who's had a rare birth outcome.
Yeah.
Where can women connect with you?
Yes, I would love that. So my Instagram is just my full name, Megan Marie McGahey. I'm sure we can probably put that
in the show notes.
Bottom, it's kind of hard to spell. Yeah. But yeah, that's my Instagram. So I would love to connect with other moms.
Yeah, awesome. Again, well, thank you. I really, really appreciate you sharing your story. And I'm glad that things are going better now. And I cannot wait to hear about your VBAC.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Woo. Wasn't that an emotional episode? There were so many times when I had my mouth open while we were recording, because that was just such an intense story. And I appreciate Megan coming on to share it. Now, after every episode, when I have a guest on, I do something called Dr. Nicole's Notes, which are my top takeaways or thoughts from the conversation. Here are my Dr. Nicole's notes for my conversation with Megan. One, I want you to understand how much of an emergency an umbilical cord prolapse is. This is a true obstetric emergency. It's one of the most serious emergencies we face in obstetrics. Cord prolapse happens when the umbilical cord slips out in front of the baby's head, and that can cut off the baby's oxygen supply, and the baby can suffer from a lack of oxygen pretty quickly. So in those moments when we recognize it, someone literally has to place their hand in the patient's vagina and hold the baby's head off of the cord to keep the cord from getting squeezed by the baby's head. And that has to happen until the baby is born. So a lot of times when you hear people say they had an emergency C-section, it happened like 20 or 30 minutes later after the decision. That may be an urgent C-section, but what happens in an umbilical cord prolapse is a true emergency C-section. This is like ripping the cords out of the wall for the bed, the monitors. We are sprinting down the hall to the OR. Someone is in the bed with the patient, keeping the pressure off the cord. So this is a really serious emergency. And for this to happen outside of the hospital, as it did in Megan's case, is kind of absolutely terrifying as an OBGYN, I'll be honest. All right, number two, you need to know what to expect and be ready to advocate for yourself. No matter where you give birth, it's truly essential that you ask about emergency protocols and levels of care. Megan's story revealed just how much things can vary between facilities. She was transferred to a hospital that didn't have an on-site OB there. They didn't have on-site anesthesiologists there, and the postpartum support was minimal. And I'm going to be honest, that's not necessarily uncommon, particularly in rural areas. The OB doctor may not be in the hospital all the time. Now, where I work, I'm an OB hospitalist. OB hospitalists are in the hospital 24/7. I actually think it's something that should be a routine part of obstetrics and should be the future of OB, that there's always an OBGYN in the hospital, but we're not there yet. So you need to ask the questions: who's on call? Are they in the hospital all the time? What are the transfer procedures if I or my baby need a higher level of care? For example, in my area, there are a couple of hospitals that have a lower level of care for the NICU and for moms. And it's not that those hospitals are bad, but you want to understand what they can do. And if transfer needs to happen, how does that happen? You want clear answers so you can prepare accordingly, and then consider what your comfort level is and consider your options, including potentially going to a different hospital if you feel like that's going to be better for you. Okay, next up is control what you can control. And I am referencing when, during the chaos of that cord prolapse, that nurse whispered the powerful words to Megan: stay calm for your baby. And those words grounded her. So even when everything feels out of control, your breath and your focus and your mindset can truly, truly make a difference. I believe it helps shift the energy of the situation. I'm a big believer in that. And that is true for birth in any setting. That's a skill that you can prepare for. So I've created the Birth with Power Mindset Bundle to help you tap into that inner calm when you need to. The bundle includes the Mama Mindset Manual. It also includes pregnancy power affirmations and beautiful birth affirmations. It's only $37. You can grab it at drnicolerankins.com/calm. The last thing I'm going to say is that healing is really possible when you have a traumatic birth, but you should do it with some support. So Megan's healing journey involved EMDR therapy, pelvic floor physical therapy, leaning on a supportive community. And if you've had a traumatic birth, which unfortunately can happen, whether that's in the hospital or otherwise, know that you don't have to carry it alone. You shouldn't carry it alone. Processing your story with trusted people and professionals will be healing and also empowering. Okay, that's it for this episode. Please share it with a friend. Every pregnant woman deserves to feel informed and empowered. Also, subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you love the show, I would love it if you would leave a quick review in Apple Podcasts. It's one of the best ways that you can demonstrate that you support my work and you appreciate my work. So please do that. And also, come find me on Instagram. I'm on Instagram at Dr. Nicole Rankins. My DMs are open. I love for you to say hi. I read every comment. I try to respond to as many DMs as I can. I can't get to all of them, but I see them all and I appreciate it. So hit me up on Instagram at Dr. Nicole Rankins. And then do me one last favor and come on back next week. And remember to trust your power and take charge of your birth.
Save big on everything for your next outdoor project when you shop at Menards. Greenworks 40-volt cordless tools have everything you need to keep your yard looking great. The Greenworks cordless trimmer and edger is lightweight, starts instantly, and comes with a 40-volt battery and charger. Pick one up today, on sale, now through June 1st. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big.